We are talking with James Hall from BATR.org and BATR.net, Breaking All the Rules. And we are having a conversation about totalitarian collectivism, among many other things. Of course, the corporate world that we find ourselves in and the expansion of this. That's basically what we are in right now. And I wanted to ask you a little bit more, obviously, how we'll get into later on how you think that we should tackle some of these problems. And but basically, what situation do you think we will find us in, let's say, 10 or 15 years down the line, if these issues largely goes unchallenged, James? You know, this is it. This will obviously just continue to expand. It will get worse and worse. And I mean, do you think that they really will be able to pull off, let's say, even legally and everything else, a world government? Because as we've seen within, you know, the European Union, that the legal issues alone have been one of the, you know, major obstacles for them to kind of homogenize Europe. They're trying, of course, that they're trying to effectivize it. But what we end up with is a huge bureaucracy with tons of rules and laws. And you know, it just it grows, as I say, exponentially, like every day almost. It's is that the future that we're looking at, and including America as well, do you think?
I think to look at it within the parameters of a governmental organizational structure or alliances or unions is not the proper way to cast your vision into the future. This is an economic issue more than anything else when it comes to the practical reality of business in government. And the fact that the economies of the world are not expanding to any degree to basically create a situation that can bail oneself out of the hole that everyone has dug themselves into means that the political decisions of union or non-union or strife among different countries, that's not very relevant any longer. What we have to acknowledge is that a new world order already exists.
Right.
And that new world order is going to implement a financial implosion of biblical perspective here. Again, the debt cannot be paid. Now, that's the fundamental issue of the entire world political spectrum at this point. Because if it can't be paid, you either have to repudiate it, which is certainly what I would advocate, or you're going to devise Herculean, draconian measures to make people live on subsistence level conditions to basically create an economy in each country to service the banker's greed. And that's what you've seen in Greece. Thank God for the people of Iceland. Thank God for them. They're an inspiration for what they did. They told the bankers it's not our debt on the derivatives. The derivatives are the mechanism upon which the implosion of the entire currency world is going to happen. You know, I'm old enough to remember when there were fixed currencies. The world had a workable economic model. The floating currencies is what has created as much of the speculation that we have in what are termed financial markets. They're not financial markets. There's no investment in any of these stock exchanges. It's pure speculation.
Right.
So to answer your question, where is this going to come 10, 15 years from now? I frankly don't think you're going to have 10, 15 years of a slow boat running over to China, if you will. We're not on a leisurely boat tour here. What we're on is casting enough paper over reissuing of new debt to service old debt that the political structures that we once knew are not able to survive when the economics collapse in each one of these countries. Now, the European Union, you're saying, it has all kinds of internal issues back and forth. But yes, look at the recent pushback from the Ukraine. Now, good for the people of Ukraine. They don't want. They shouldn't be part of the EU. It's a very bad deal from their perspective. But the EU itself is a completely unworkable situation. But yet it continues.
Yeah.
It continues, and it can't. It does not stop. It gets more intrusive. It gets more destructive in the way that it rips apart individual countries' economies.
Yeah.
I remember my visits to Spain, very prosperous. Things were great, wonderful place. Not any longer. Not any longer.
And again, my point there earlier was that this is the very point, right? This is to run the economies of the world into the ground. And at that point, you have a structure where, let's say, the World Bank or other nations or that collectivized debt kind of takes over. You move from... whatever currency you have over to SDRs pretty much, and the country becomes a perpetual in debt state where they always are going to be dependent on what those who've borrowed them that money is going to tell them to do, basically, right? Because that's where Spain is heading right now. They're under the leash, and if they do get more loans, they'll just get further and further and further into that web, if you will, that has been spun for them.
Yes, you brought up one of the points I was going to mention. That's called the SDR again. The SDR has been around. That concept's been floated, probably going back 20 years at least that I remember. And the SDR basically it's going to be the world currency, if you will. It may not be called that, but in essence, that's what it's going to be. And the bankers will basically collateralize this new so-called currency with some gold to basically create some public confidence. But it's all going to be administered out of the Bank of International Settlement,
yeah,
which is the central bank of all central banks. And the fact that very few people have ever even heard of the Bank of International Settlement shows how ignorant they really are. They have to understand that we've been controlled financially way before Bretton Woods at the end of World War II, when the dollar became king and the reserve currency. There will be a time not too far in the future where the dollar will not be the reserve currency that it once was, and that there will be alternatives. You can see that with the BRIC nations looking to have a competing IMF to basically free themselves from the World Bank and from the IMF, if you will. You're also going to see that countries like Iran, which is really what the dispute is more than anything else, it's certainly not about whether they go nuclear or not. The dispute is whether or not they accept gold and or Chinese currency for oil, and not to denominate the sale of oil in dollars. That was one of the main reasons why Iraq was taken down. It is the American Empire attempting to lash out in its last vestige of control of global financial circumstance. Now, they're not going to win. The dollar can't win in the end. The dollar will ultimately have to be destroyed, and I would, if one's asking to speculate what might happen, I think you'll have a currency call-in at some point on a Friday night, and basically all your financial assets will be swapped for a new currency. At one time, I was going to say 20-1, and at this point, it may be 100-1 or more, based on what's happening out there.
Yeah.
And when that happens, your standard of living is going to go right in the tank.
And at the same time, then, this has been a plan and a plot from, the people educated at London School of Economics, George Soros included, that this is about wealth redistribution at the same time. There is an egalitarian ideal at the backdrop of this to get people to accept the way that things are going. But my question has always been, that's not going to be the case, though. Once this system is in place, it's still going to have that administrative elite core at the top that's going to run the system, and they're going to have all the luxuries at their disposal, and then it's going to be a subclass of basically everyone else from that point. That's how I see this is going to go down.
Whenever I hear the word egalitarian, I basically cringe, because I know that usually the progressives think it's a religion. They think it's the holy grail of human existence, that people are equal. And I'm basically a student of human nature, and natural law clearly identifies that people are equal in terms of rights, but they are certainly, history corroborates, they're not equal in terms of talent, inclination, perseverance, and the will to achieve. The whole idea of trying to make people equal is just probably one of the main motivations that have killed more people on this planet than anything else.
Right.
It is just so foolish. It distorts all the reasons why Europe fought World War One, and why the conflict known as World War Two was inevitable after the settlement of World War One. The whole idea that basically people have some type of entitlement from society based on their good citizenship by obeying the authorities at will is just problematic, is the kindest term to use. But in my viewpoint, it would be the most destructive false philosophy that people have been laboring under for over 150 years.
Well, economically, that wouldn't work, because as we know, governments don't actually generate anything. They take off of other, corporations and people who are productive, and then they divvy it out as they see fit. So this very basic idea that the behavior that we see on the rest of this planet, which is if an animal is born into the biosphere, into the ecosystem, it needs to have an own internal will and drive to sustain itself, otherwise it won't survive. Why is it that people don't think that should apply to human beings as well?
Well, people are not willing to accept the fact that our nature has fallen. Humanity is basically evil. And if any of the utopians think that is not true, they have a very hard life to live through. Once you understand and accept that human nature is evil, then you're at least in a position to try to set up buffers, if you will, to protect not only yourself, but your own family, your own community, your own region, your own country, if you will, from situations that ultimately are threatening their well-being. This is not a very pleasant world to operate in a lot of respects. And the whole idea that technology is creating this wonderful future, all it really has done is to diminish all the important aspects of culture that civilization cherished for hundreds and hundreds of years. We're operating now under a society that basically is throwing out all the rules, contrary to my breaking all the rules. Certain rules are important to maintain. And the rules of man and woman, marriage, if you will, is at the forefront of here in the United States. Well, we have a breakdown in ethics and morality that is unheard of in any other era that I've studied.
Yeah, it's interesting in terms of how quickly things have turned around. I mean, I'm just thinking back to there are certain things in human history that have been run in a certain way, and there is a tradition there, if you will. It doesn't mean that it's all 100% right, or it's all good or whatnot, but there's been a function in how we've lived for, I think, a couple of 100,000 years now. And And it's interesting to see how quickly a lot of people are willing to turn their back on those types of tradition, just because they have this idea that if it's old, it's bad, but if it's new and different, then it's going to be good, right?
Well, that's one of the huge faults and failures and let's call it a sin, to be politically correct, of religion at this point. Some of the largest religious institutions and denominations have completely turned their back on their own principles as faith, as a faith-based philosophy. What they're doing is accepting popular culture as a added addition to what they're attempting to operate as a business. Because in the United States, the religious organizations are non-profit 501c3 organizations that are under the authority of the government, and they're afraid to basically exercise their First Amendment right to preach from the pulpit. What we have in religion is probably the most disturbing aspect of the prospects of a better future, because what we need is a revival. We need a revival, not necessarily of any denomination or institutional format of a clergy. What we need is a revival in repentance of our hubris, that basically we're able to make a better world for ourselves, when what we've really achieved is to create a bigger cesspool for everyone else.
So your point there as well is that the ideas of a utopia and everything else, and strive towards egalitarianism, etc., that's those tenets are as much as a religion as everything else, despite though, you know, when you talk with people like that, then it's all about human nature and the way how we really are, right? But it seems then that what we are fighting against in too much regard is not only human nature, but also the belief, right? The entire belief system, that it's this way or it's that way, and you know, how can we get out of that?
Well, take the entire environmental movement. I've been involved with a number of groups and activist organizations that would be generally and generically claim the title of being environmental in orientation. But we're not climate change people. We're not global warming people. We don't buy into all the false and pseudoscience that's out there that is the religion of these progressive utopians. And it is a spiritual problem. They don't have a spiritual orientation other than the beliefs that they have in some manufactured and fabricated notion of what's happening to this planet. This planet has some very serious environmental issues, but they're not from CO2. The environmental issues are being the systematic destruction of our ecosystem by genetic modified food patents that Monsanto basically has.
Sure.
People like that.
Yeah.
And I commend the people of Europe who have been way out in front from the United States. The United States is so backward on GMO foods that they're not just an ostrich with their head in the sand. They are absolutely oblivious. And it's probably because of 50 years of fluoride in the water, if I could be a little cute here. You know, we've been dumbed down with the Prozac society for so long that people just don't have the ability of rational thought any longer.
Right, right. Well, let me ask you a little bit more about, you mentioned the fallen nature of humans, or really that there is evil in man, counter to maybe then what utopians would say, that it's no, it's all social conditions or the environment that you grew up in, etc., that makes you good or bad. But one thing that I've been, you know, talking about is this idea as well, that I'm a great believer also on top of that, to kind of counter that idea, that people are kind. There are a lot of good-hearted people out there, as opposed to, you know, those who are just out to you know, disrupt and you know, corrode everything that we have. But if that is a tenet, then we have a structure in place where there is an interest of, you know, people They want to help other people. They want to be kind. They want to make sure that their family is taken care of, ultimately their friends, and then their neighbors next, what have you. That's, it's a charitable function that's there in place. And that, to me, seems to be something that should be much more relied upon than the fact that we have a state structure that is there to perform that task, if you will. I mean, again, there's something that I've seen devoid in, for example, you know, Scandinavian culture, that there is so much that the state takes that people at the end of the day can't hardly be charitable. There's a lot of these going around, of course, as well. But the fact is that there is a perception that, okay, I'm not going to be charitable because the state has already taken so much, and that money is supposed to be provided to for hospitals and for education and everything else. But what happens every time, James, there is that the services that the government offers, they continue to fail. They don't have any money. Nothing is, you know, is going down the tubes, basically, in that regard. And so how do you view something like that? That the, why is there no trust in charity anymore? I know that that tradition is far more prevalent in America, I guess, but isn't that a good aspect of you know, human beings that we should look towards?
Well, from the Bible, we basically have the tradition of tithing 10%, which basically included a lot of charity, good work, if you will. Charity's wonderful. The problem is that the government is the charity, and the government is the only charity that most people basically recognize. The only way you're going to break that cycle is to starve the beast. And if you want to practice true charity, you have to grow disposable income to a middle class that's diminishing. And once the middle class becomes the poor class, who's going to give any charity to anyone?
Sure.
And the only way that you can basically stop this, and I think that's where you're trying to lead us into this discussion, if you will, is to basically find some alternatives to fight against this inhuman system that we have that's institutionalized at every aspect of civil and social life.
Yeah.
And I'm the strongest believer, if you will, in civil disobedience. And the only way you're going to starve the beast is not to pay taxes. Stop paying all legal taxes any way you possibly can. And I'm never going to advocate people to break the law. But what I am going to say is they have to confront the law.
Yeah.
They have to basically use the methods of Gandhi to basically create a cultural awakening among the average person who is so oblivious to life that their only concern is what's on television in the evening when they get home, because they're so tired from their daily labors that they have nothing else left energy to put into the struggle. But unfortunately, that begs the problem. The only way the system is going to basically react is through pressure. And I'm used to doing lobbying and political pressure on the legislative level. And that's what people have to start getting involved with, because that's all that's left in the process. You have to withdraw as much support from the system as you possibly can. And it all starts with each individual internalizing one fact: the system is no longer legitimate.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
Yeah.
If it's no longer legitimate, that means the facade that we go through every election cycle is nothing more than a waste of time and energy. And that doesn't mean that I suggest that people not go to the polls. I suggest that people start organizing third-party candidates wherever possible, but withhold any support from incumbent establishment-type politicians. But again, the politician is not the answer nor the solution. They're not the person who is controlling any of this. They are being manipulated by the money interests that only create certain situations that are ever allowed to be addressed in public. Most of the discussions that go on that are intellectually rewarding and groundbreaking is completely off the radar screen. You're never going to hear anything in mass media that's even worth talking about at this stage. Frankly, the only television that I've been watching lately, and this is kind of an admission of curiosity from my perspective, is in the United States, we finally got RT television out of Moscow.
Mm-hmm.
And they're telling more truth about the United States than I've ever heard from this country.
Yeah, they don't tell all the truth, but they do tell more than the other channels. That's for sure.
And that's not to say that I buy into any of the aspects of what the old Soviet regime was like. Quite to the contrary, I'm a vigorous anti-communist. But the point is, I'm not anti-Russian people.
Sure. Well, exactly. That's a big difference, by the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The people throughout this entire planet are being treated as slaves.
That's right.
And it's the old equation. There's a lot more of us than there are the people who are doing the manipulation. It's time for a rebellion. It's time for active resistance against the institutional formats that basically are creating a vast wasteland of a future for our children. Where's our responsibility in our generation of leaving a better planet to our children?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's to wearing a sweater and not driving as much around in your car. That's where the responsibility is perceived to be these days, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Now, the non-participation is key that you mentioned here. Stop supporting the system, you know, not to provide the finances to those who are literally building the prison walls around you, and people are literally taking part in that process. You know, we've mentioned it before, but again, we have to bring it up. Report from 2010 mentioned that more than 53% of the U.S. tax money at that point were going to the military, and it was said that the 2011 military budget was the largest in the world in history, not just in actual dollars, but in inflation-adjusted dollars, exceeding even the spending of World War II when the nation was an all-out, you know, war footing. This military spending is all its myriad forms works out to represent about 53% of total U.S. federal spending, and that doesn't even include actually the black ops within, you know, DARPA development technology, the money that goes to, like, invent, you know, the drones and these new technological ways of controlling people and spying on them, basically. So that source of flow of cash to them has to be cut off at some point, right? Otherwise, it would just grow and grow and grow until there's no other option left.
Well, I wish it was that simple, but it's not, because we have something in the United States that other countries cannot get away with to the extent that America does, and it's called deficit spending. Taxes, unfortunately, really do not go to pay for governmental services. The taxes are really fundamentally being collected to pay for the bankers. And that's why the debt has to be repudiated. We have $17 trillion acknowledged dollars in the federal deficit coffers, if you will. But they're really more like $150 trillion. With obligations that are yet to be met.
That's a lot of money.
you can never collect enough taxes to pay for any of this.
No.
And to address your question, how do you cut off the military? All right, I write for a couple of sites that are military oriented. Now, how I basically was invited to be on those sites always puzzled me a bit, but I have to go to task against those people who serve in the military. Since Vietnam, the United States decided to abandon the draft. So we have an enlisted armed force. And fundamentally, when you're enlisted, you get paid. And then by my definition, that makes you a mercenary.
Yeah.
Now, those are strong words, and a lot of veterans don't want to hear that.
Sure.
But I guarantee you that all the veterans that serve, they're not serving their country. They're serving a governmental regime and a corrupt economic system that ultimately is enslaving all of them. One particular site that I no longer have a relationship with got very upset at me because I am a strong advocate of the Tea Party that was pushing for sequestration and basically cutting back of the military budget. Very, very surprising that sequestration ever came about and that there was an actual reduction, not in real terms, but in nominal terms. And their concern at this particular organization was that they were not going to get all their benefits that they're entitled to. Well, I'm sorry, my friends in the military. You know, you went off to Iraq. You went off to Afghanistan. You're fighting for oil. You're fighting for big money. You're fighting for geopolitical hegemony. You know,
yeah.
You're not protecting the United States. When the military decides to deploy their divisions around the Beltway and to basically arrest the people in D.C. for crimes against humanity, that's when I'll start supporting the military.
Yeah.
But at this point, I have no sympathy at all for the people who basically serve.
I understand that. I do. It's well, I've been saying it for years. It's like the there is a big difference between defense and having the ability to defend your own country as opposed to what's going on right now. And again, it's more than, as we should point out always, so of course the amount of money in the military, of course, is unprecedented from the point of view of the US. But let's not forget about Britain, even Sweden has troops in Afghanistan, for Christ's sake. So there's a lot of Poland, there's a lot of country that's has joined in this global war on terror, which you pointed out before is a complete fraud and a complete farce, and yet it does continue. Yeah.
Why does NATO still exist? Wasn't the mission of NATO during the Cold War was to create a buffer against the Soviet regime?
Right.
Well, guess what? NATO is nothing more than an enforcement arm for the New World Order. That's what it is.
Sure.
In the New World Order happens to reside with his home location in Europe. It's not New York City or Washington D.C. as people think. No, Americans really are not in control of their own country, and they're clueless as to their own history. They don't understand that the New World Order is a European centric creation as much as anything else. It was exported from Europe to the United States.
Yeah.
And the United States, in most cases, is not calling the shots. They're basically going along playing the tune.
Well, exactly. They're the enforcement arm of the New World Order. And as you rightly point out, the headquarters for NATO, they're in Brussels, in Belgium, just where the seat of the European Union is as well, which tells quite a bit of what's going on there. And we had the debacle of them going into, Kosovo and the whole Bosnian situation and everything else. So they have some blood on their hands as well, that's for sure.
Well, again, what will the next 15 years look like? Let's hope that we get through the next 15 years without World War III, because I think that's right at the precipice at this point. And it's not going to be an accident. It's going to be an orchestrated, and it's going to be a designed confrontation. And it may not be global in scope, but I can certainly envision a situation where the Middle East blows up to such a degree that it's going to be inevitable and all the apocalyptic prophecies will actually come true from a geopolitical perspective.
What would you think would occur that? Are we talking about Iran and possibly China and Russia joining in on that?
Well, frankly, I think Israel will start it.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't get into that discussion here this evening, but the issue in the Middle East is that we have a rogue nuclear power. And that's not Iran. It's called Israel.
That's right. Vanunu, he spoke out about this back in the, was that in the 90s or late 80s or something, right?
Well, there have been many people. I always go back to the Samson strategy that's there. If the Zionists ever feel that they are being pushed out of existence, they're going to just torch off all their little missiles and just let it all go.
Well, I mean, I think that that whole situation, we, as you said, we didn't really talk about that, but we do have a few minutes left here. I guess we could go into that a little bit more in detail. How do you think that, when it comes to Israel and AIPAC and everything else, how do you think that interface works with the American policy as well?
Well, AIPAC and the Zionists basically control the Congress. Contrary to much of the criticism regarding Obama, he's actually attempted to make a little more balanced foreign policy and not kowtow completely to the Likudniks, as I call them.
Yeah.
But the solution from Israel's standpoint is that the Israeli people themselves have to throw out these crazy expansionists that basically are controlling their country. There could be a peaceful resolution of coexistence in the Middle East at this particular juncture if the warmongers in Israel decided to actually want to have peace and not to have a greater Israel strategy that basically wants to neutralize all their neighbors.
Well, some people have speculated, James, that a final, you know, world war here, if you will, before they would push for a world government would be just that, for the incentive and for the reasoning that people would say, oh, that's it, we can't have this anymore with nations and everything else, meaning there would be an orchestrated event, more theatrics to be able to get people to that state where they say, yeah, we have to finally do away with nations and we have to bring in a new world order, a world government in order to keep things in check and in balance, right? That's how they've operated. They create a problem, offer the solution, you know, and then people adhere to that.
Well, when people decide to embrace a spiritual renewal, they will have to confront the fact that the satanic elements of the New World Order are really principalities of spirit and not just human nature. There is such a thing as Satan, and it's alive and well in the New World Order and all the institutions that are advocating that type of global dominance of humanity.
Interesting. Well, I guess we can leave that for another time, James. There's, of course, much more to discuss on that note and to bring into the conversation. But this has been a good primer, if you will, if we can call it that. We really appreciate having you on and that you wanted to do it with us and talk a little bit more about your website, about your, you know, philosophy and writings, basically. So why don't you give us some of the details again where people can go to follow you? And please, if there's anything else you'd like to, you know, leave us with, please go ahead.
We invite people to read Breaking All the Rules. The address is batr.org, O-R-G, and batr.net, N-E-T. Our writings are basically archived. They're well organized. And we invite everyone to comment on our forum and to give any perspective that they like. We appreciate the opportunity of speaking with your audience.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, James, Breaking All the Rules. We'll have the links up on redicecreations.com and redicemembers.com as well, so you can click through easily from there. Okay, well, we say thank you and have a good one. Keep up the good work, James.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for listening today, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you learned something new, some new ideas, some perspectives to consider. We'll be back in just a few days. We have upcoming David Talbot, Walter Block, Richard Dewhurst, Dan Fogler, and Ben Davidson. So stay clear, sharp, and we'll talk more in just a couple of days. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.